We will begin this meeting of the Board of Education of the Logan City School District. Today is Tuesday, May 19th. We're meeting in a regular meeting, but it is being done by virtually, and it's streamed through the district Facebook page, or it can be viewed in the district office boardroom at 101 West Center. It is 5 o'clock p.m. Those in attendance are board members Ann Geary, Jenny Johnson, Frank Stewart, Larry Williams. We should be joined soon by Christy Cooley. We also have Superintendent Frank Schofield, Business Administrator Jeff Barbin, and Shelley Bowman, our Administrative Secretary. Earlier today, the Board of Education met for a site visit at Hillcrest Elementary. We walked through the new Hillcrest Elementary School, the construction project. We're really excited. It's on time and we'll be ready for next school year, and we're thrilled about that. It's a beautiful new school. We will not be doing regular public comment, but we will receive public comment via the board's Facebook page. If anyone has questions for public comment, please submit them on the district website, not the district Facebook page. So district website, there is a form for you to submit to the school board for us for public comment, for us to read your comments out loud. Superintendent, have we had any comments to this point?
We have not received any yet, no.
Okay, if you'll let me know as we get after our consent calendar. We will begin tonight's meeting with a Pledge of Allegiance led by me. It might be easier for our listening audience if everyone besides me mutes so that we don't have all of our feedback. And then we will start with our celebrations. So the Pledge of Allegiance, please join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Christy Cooley has joined us. I miss our students saying the pledge with us. Having them come to our opening ceremonies is very special, and I miss hearing their wonderful voices. We do have some celebrations tonight, and I am going to ask our superintendent to please tell us about our District Employees of the Year. Superintendent.
Thank you. Let me share my screen so I can put our images up there. Our Employee Support Professional of the Year was Ms. Ingrid Sanchez. She is our parent liaison at Bridger Elementary School. If you know Ingrid at all, you know that she is extremely positive. She does a lot of time reaching out to parents, and she has been one of the primary drivers this year at Bridger, addressing their attendance issues. She has made a lot of personal contact with parents, both over the phone, face-to-face, at homes. They've scheduled workshops, parenting support classes, etc. And it really has been an outstanding initiative in the Bridger community. They've seen a significant decrease in the number of student absences this year, and they've strengthen relationships with parents. You know, Ingrid and she and I, as we would talk about this, she'll tell me that, you know, the parents come and they say, we know that we need to be at school. We know our child needs to be here more frequently. Here's the challenge we're running into. What can we do? How can we work together? And Ingrid's able to give them support and some guidance and encouragement. So she really has been an outstanding member of the Bridger school community and really reflective in many ways of all of the positive things we want our parent liaisons to be doing. So it is an outstanding employee, and we're excited to be able to celebrate her. I know some of you have experiences working with Ingrid. Is there anything that any of you would like to add?
She's just always positive. Whenever you see her, you feel like she's your friend.
She's absolutely wonderful. I couldn't agree more. Our Administrator of the Year is Mr. Matt Bennett. He is the principal at Woodruff Elementary School. Matt has been in our district for quite some time. He's a teacher and a special ed specialist in the district office providing support services for principals and teachers across the district, and he has been at Woodruff. Woodruff has seen some phenomenal things happen. They had the highest, I'll have to get the specific numbers for you for our next meeting when we report in the summer, but they had an extremely high rate of exiting students from ESL service, meaning they helped a high number of their English learner students develop the proficiency skills that they needed to not require ESL services anymore. And that's because of the targeted approach that they've used as a school. They're working on strengthening their behavior supports and really looking at the climate that they create for staff and students there. And his staff absolutely loves them. The community cannot get enough of Principal Bennett. We hear that regularly as we talk to parents in the neighborhood, as we go and watch them as they're distributing lunches, or as we visit with teachers. He is extremely well-liked, and we are seeing some really outstanding work at Woodruff Elementary because of the work that he's doing. And finally, our Teacher of the Year is someone who we know very well, Miss Kathy Sherman, who's our ESL teacher at Ellis Elementary. Kathy, you know, the joke is that, you know, to be the Utah Teacher of the Year, you need to be the person who goes and, you know, volunteers in hospice and, you know, reads to, you know, students who can't see. And Kathy is the person who does those kinds of things. Kathy is extremely committed to the welfare of the students that are in her class. She works with parents, helping them access community resources, how to get driver's licenses, jobs, job applications, accessing health care. She did things working with businesses in the Ellis community for the students who didn't have access to internet at home, and worked with a couple of neighborhood businesses to get permission for students at Ellis to use the business's Wi-Fi to access instructional materials during this pandemic dismissal period. She is innovative, she is creative, and she is a go-getter. So we've been thrilled to recognize her as our District Teacher of the Year. As you see there, through our partnership with Young Honda, she gets to drive that beautiful car around for the next year with the vinyl lettering that says that she is the Logan City School District Teacher of the Year for 2020. So we're thrilled to be able to celebrate all three of those employees for the outstanding contributions they make to our students and our staff across our district.
We normally get to have them come here and we get pictures and we celebrate with them, but they had wonderful celebrations at each of their schools. As you can see, Kathy was caught during the Ellis schools move up to Hillcrest. You can tell she's up by the fence at Hillcrest, which is an exciting thing that's happening for Ellis right now. Our other celebration tonight is Taylor Fang, someone who we have had at board meeting many times, is a recipient of the National Merit Scholarship. I was just looking up what it means to be a National Merit finalist, semifinalist, finalist, and then a Merit Scholarship. And there are not many Merit Scholarships. Those who make it to the very final, there are very few of them. And Taylor has represented us so well in so many areas of her life. She's one of our valedictorians. She has received a lot of accolades as a Sterling Scholar and in other areas. We wish we could have her here with us tonight, but we recognize her as one of the very top students, not only in the state of Utah, but in the United States. Last I talked to her, her plan was to go to Harvard, and she will do great things. We know that she will continue to represent Logan High well wherever she goes. Are there any celebrations or questions, comments that board members would like to make? Larry first.
I just had an opportunity to drive down Main Street and down West Center Street and to see the banners for the valedictorians and the graduating seniors of Logan High. And I think that's a great tradition that I'd hopefully like to see us continue in the future, not just this year. But I think that's a great positive support for our students. So I'd just like to mention that.
Yeah, and the conversations that we've had with the Downtown Alliance and with the high school administration, we think this is something we're going to try to continue.
Good.
It's been very positive. It's fun to, you know, here I can sit in my office and look out the window and you see families with their graduates kind of wandering around looking at signs and, you know, taking pictures by them. It's been a cool experience.
Frank, how did we decide which businesses? Did we just blanket or did we make special requests? How did we arrange for that?
We worked with the leadership of the Downtown Alliance, and they reached out to their businesses and said, hey, this is something that we would like to do as an alliance. If you would be interested in having student posters in your business windows, please contact. And they worked through Gary Saxton. And then Gary got the list of the businesses to our student body officers, and our student body officers distributed the posters to the businesses. I don't believe that too many businesses requested specific students. I believe a couple did.
That's what I want.
So we didn't. I don't think we had too much of that. Generally, it was businesses saying, yes, we would like to participate in celebrating the seniors.
Very cool.
Thank you. Christy, you had a comment?
Yes. Posters on Main Street they're also off Main Street. So it's not just Main Street. So hopefully we can communicate, because when I was coming out today, I thought, oh, well, there's some on Center Street. So it's not. So if you're missing someone, look, you know, maybe go down Center, First North, and see that there's more besides just the ones on Main Street, because it's been fascinating to watch all those. And the kids are so excited. I had two of them call me and say, my poster's in the, one of them was in the logo shop, and the other one was, I can't remember where the other one was, but I think that's a great thing. The other celebration I just wanted to acknowledge tonight was the parade. The teacher parade was just amazing. I was grateful that I got to watch that in multiple locations, and what a great way to honor our district. And the kids were happy, and the little signs they made were fun. So I appreciated being able to participate in the teacher administrator staff parade, pretty much. It wasn't just teachers. So that was a great way to engage in the students in the district.
Jenny.
I just wanted to express my gratitude to our teachers as we get closer to the end of the year. They have just gone out of their way, just sending emails and expressing support to our students, to just, you know, sending their emails and expressing support to continue sending educational opportunities and lessons and just connecting with our students, because this has been a very difficult time. So I think all of our teachers, I just want to say kudos. Thank you so much for doing that.
And I know our classified staff members have really been helping with that as well. I have a neighbor who works in the special education department at one of our schools, and they are reaching out to students every day and making sure that things are going well for those students in their homes and that education is still taking place. And we just have really amazing employees. And I think we're seeing that the resiliency of our staff and also our students. And I also think that this crisis has created some innovation, such as the banners and the signs in the stores. I think we're working with people that we haven't before, and that it's a great way to rethink how do we do things, how do we keep traditions, but how do we expand to even better traditions, perhaps. Thank you all. We will move on to the next item, which is our consent calendar. We need action to be taken on minutes dated May 12th, 2020, the April check summary, and the April check register. Is there a motion for the consent calendar? If you'd raise your hand if you're ready to make that motion. Christy Cooley makes the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Frank Stewart. All those in favor of approving the consent calendar, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Do we have any additional public comment items that have come in, Superintendent?
No, we do not.
All right. We will move then to our action items. Our first action item is approval of the tentative list of Logan High School graduates. We normally have Logan High present that, but we will have the superintendent present that to us tonight.
Thank you. So in board book, you have the list of the proposed graduates of Logan High School. These are the students who are expected to graduate based on completion of all district and state level requirements. So these are the students who, as they have worked with their counselors and the administration and the teachers, these are the students that are expected to be ready for graduation this week. The final list of graduates will be presented to the board in the fall after any students who needed additional time to earn some makeup credits have been able to do so. So that report in the fall will be our official graduation report. This list that you have for you tonight is the list of students who it's proposed have completed their requirements for graduation and are ready to graduate this coming week. So we're simply presenting that for your review as a board and your approval of the list of graduates.
By law, this is a board action to approve those graduates. Is there a motion to approve the graduates? Larry, it looked like you raised your hand. Do you want to make the motion?
Sure. I move to approve the proposed list of graduates for the Logan High School graduating class of 2020.
Okay, the motion was made by Larry Williams. Is there a second? Seconded by Christy Cooley. Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the graduation list from the proposed graduation list from Logan High School, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We will move on to our next item then. We're excited for those graduates. Our next item is a resolution to activate policy on emergency pay for employees, and that will be done retroactively. You will remember that at our last meeting, we adopted a new policy about emergency. We adopted that emergency policy. Superintendent, will you talk us through this?
Yes, thank you. So in the policy that the board approved last week is something that is required by the state in order for us to provide emergency pay to employees in times of something like the school dismissal period. This policy governs how that works. It provides direction to staff so they understand that if there are situations where an individual will be unable to work because of the emergency situations, in this case, the COVID-19 pandemic, that we have ways to still be able to pay those individuals, even though the work that they are doing may be different from what they have been originally hired to do. So in that policy, it had the guidelines that govern that payment. But as part of it, it says that in order for that policy to be enacted, the board has to adopt a resolution. So that prevents us, that ensures that we don't just arbitrarily start, applying the guidelines of the policy, when there isn't a legitimate emergency. It's something that says the board has to come together and say, we're in an emergency situation. We believe that as a board, it's time to enact this policy, so we're going to do it by a resolution. So in your board, in board book, you have a draft resolution on the action sheet. It says it is a resolution to enact the provisions of policy DBD, employee compensation, during school closure and extraordinary circumstances. Whereas the Logan City School District Board of Education recognizes the value of the work done by all district employees in promoting the mission of the district. Whereas it is the goal of the Logan City School District Board of Education to ensure all employees are equitably compensated for the work they do to promote the mission of the district. And whereas the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted the ability of employees to perform their work and continue to be equitably compensated. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Logan City School District Board of Education enact the provisions of policy DBD, employee compensation during school closure and extraordinary circumstances, effective retroactively to the date of March 20th, 2020. So what is proposed here is that the board would adopt this resolution, that we would then retroactively enact the provisions of the policy that was adopted last week, which will allow us to continue to pay employees through the duration of the school dismissal period.
Any questions or comments for the superintendent, Frank Stewart?
So, superintendent, I couldn't quite understand what we're actually doing. I understand the emergency scenario, but to put it as retroactively and then not have anything listed as costs or budgets or anything like that, could you just explain how this financially is accommodated? It doesn't mean that we had people work without paying them, correct?
Correct. We did not have people work without paying them. We would, in some cases, have something that would lean more in the other direction. People would continue to receive their contracted pay, but perhaps they were not working as many hours as they were originally contracted, or the type of work that they were doing changed significantly. The reason why the policy that we adopted last meeting was required by the state was because statewide there was an acknowledgement that there were a number of employees who would not be able to work their normal hours doing their normal job. And as part of the state government's effort to maintain a payment for those individuals, because the money had already been allocated through the state budgeting process, that we would be able to continue to pay them even though they might not be working the same hours as what they were contracted to when they were hired. So the policy is what creates the flexibility for that to happen. And then us enacting it is what actually allows it to work at the district level. In terms of costs, there are no additional costs to the district. Basically, what this does is says that we are spending the money that we would have spent if all of these individuals were working in a normal school setting and we had not had the dismissal period. So the costs to the district are the same as what they would have been if the dismissal period had not occurred.
And this is what we were instructed to do by the governor and the state superintendent. So this isn't just something that Logan District is doing on its own, correct?
Correct. This is something that we were instructed would need to happen if we wanted to engage in the emergency pay and still have it meet all the state guidelines that have been coming down. And Jeff was in some of the meetings with business administrators where that was communicated more explicitly than it was with the superintendents. Jeff, do you have anything that you would add to this?
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with the federal government and their requirements that we treat employees that are paid from federal funds the same as we do that from state funds, and some of those guidelines came from the federal government, and then the state took those federal guidelines and put them into the format for the policy that you passed and for the resolution that you're passing tonight. But yeah, all these funds have been budgeted. You know, the funds are all budgeted to spend, so there's not an extra expense that it's costing us to be able to do that. That was part of the budgets that we passed last year.
I'm not sure we completely addressed your question.
It's still a little confusing to me. I guess that I understand that the amounts that we budgeted are available, but since it's retroactive, that would infer that we didn't pay somebody somewhere. So I guess we're just doing paperwork, even though we acted normally. Is that the?
That is. Nobody had pay withheld.
Yeah.
Everybody was paid. So we don't have any employees who did work and were not compensated for that. This really is something that, and Jeff, correct me if I misspeak here, this has not changed our practice. We have been paying employees for work done and for the time spent. What this is saying is we recognize that we paid some individuals for doing much less work than they would have ordinarily done, or different work than they would have ordinarily done,
Under this provision, it's okay.
And under this provision, that's okay.
Yes, and the federal government, realizing that this practice started across the country with soft closures and other things in all the states, allowed us to pass the policy or the resolution retroactively. They realized that we were doing this and most school districts were paying their people the same. And they said, well, the requirement then is that you have this policy in place and that you pass the resolution, but we're allowing you to pass the resolution retroactively to cover the time period in which you paid those employees.
Yeah. There is much.
Okay. I hope so.
We did not have anybody that needed to file for unemployment services or anything of that nature, Albert. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Anne, we can't hear you.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Christy. You have a comment.
I'm sorry, Anne, we couldn't hear you. The question that I have is just that, do we need to put in there that it's just for the school year that we're in? So it's retroactive to 3/20 of 2020, ending June 31st of 2020? I mean, I would think we'd want to readdress it if this situation goes on. So I don't know if there needs to be an end date, that it's just this school year, or does this go, I mean, we're kind of up in the air about when this whole thing's going to last. I just didn't know if there needed to be an end date listed in the resolution.
Jeff, what do you say? My first thought is that an end date would be wise. I don't know if we shoot for, you know, the end of June, if we put that there, and then if we are still in an emergency situation where we feel this needs to be continued to be applied, we can reenact it before we go into July. Jeff, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we could put an end date of June 30th. As you know, we pay teachers on their pay schedule from September through August, so they would still be receiving pay, but the work that would have been done, all the work would have been done for this fiscal year on June 30th. So I think if you added that to the resolution, effectively retroactively 3/20 through 6/30 of 2020. Yeah, I think that would be appropriate.
Okay, would someone like to make that motion? Christy?
I have another follow-up question. So I'm assuming that, just as Jeff mentioned, that the teachers would continue to get paid through August, but we won't be paying staff members that would normally not be working in June pay, correct?
Correct. Yes, okay, we're not paying additional funds, and those teachers are, the payrolls are run in June for the July and August, so that they all of that money comes out of this fiscal year's budget.
Right, but we won't be adding, I mean, right. if a teacher or a staff member normally doesn't work in June, we won't be paying them in June, whereas we're paying them now when they may or may not be working.
Right. We're just paying them until they complete their contract.
Okay. All right. All right. With that, so do you say, Jeff, would the date, effective date, be June 30th or June? I don't know how many days are in June.
Yeah, June 30th.
30th? All right. I would like to make a motion that we approve the resolution as explained, with a start date, a retroactive date of 3/20 of 2020, effective to June 30th of 2020.
All right, that motion with the amendment has been made by Christy Cooley. Is there a second to the motion? An amendment.
Second.
Okay, seconded by Frank Stewart. All those in favor of approving the resolution as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we will move forward with that motion. I know we need to file it a few places so that we make sure it's on our records. Our next item of business is...
Actually, Anne, could I make a request? For our discussion of our capital expenditures, our capital expense requests, we have asked Don Bell, our maintenance manager, to join us. he is ready to join us on the Zoom meeting. If the board would be amenable to it, if we could amend the agenda to move that item to now and then continue with the rest of the items, that would allow Don to participate and then continue with his evening.
Would someone like to make a motion to move item action item number 6 to the next item? Christy Cooley?
I missed board meeting last time, so I'm full of making motions today. I would like to make a motion to amend the agenda to have the capital expense request next.
Is there a second to that motion? Seconded by Larry Williams. All those in favor of amending the agenda, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we'll have Don join us.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Welcome, Don.
Thank you.
Senator Jeff, which one of you are going to lead out on this discussion?
Well, ask Jeff to lead out on this one and then on the auditor up there. But Jeff, okay. If you'll walk the board through the process, please.
Okay, so you want me to share my screen or do you want to put up the what's on board book on your screen, Frank?
I can share mine and put it up on board book.
Okay, thank you. So each year we go through a process that Don sends out an invitation for all the principals and directors to submit capital requests, what they feel like they need for capital requests. And then when Don receives those, I think they were due this year on April 15th, then he and I sit down and work through that process of determining what we would recommend. And then a committee meets, the Capital Request Committee, and Frank Stewart, Frank Schofield, myself, Don Bell, Eric Markworth, and Spencer Holmgren are on that committee. So we met and reviewed the capital projects, the requests, and determined which ones we felt should be funded, and then we bring those to the board so that they can approve those. And these are the capital requests. So this first page is in green. The first page is the requests that were approved by the committee. And the second page lists the requests that are not approved by the committee. And so I've got them in listed by cost from lowest to highest. So you'll see that the least amount of cost would be from Adams. They want to replace the tile in the storage room in the main office. And then we also are recommending the board approve new concession stand, a new track, some drainage resolution issues, and the press box, and updating of the data and electrical on the athletic complex at Logan High. And the estimate for that is about $700,000. So, you know, the total of the approved projects that we've approved this year is a little over $1 million. The bulk of it would be the athletic complex at Logan High. The rest, from lowest to the highest cost, are listed there.
Questions, comments people have regarding this list? Christy?
I am grateful. Obviously, we want to maintain our buildings. I feel like it's a little, I would support changing the concessions and the track, but I would probably want to have a little bit more feedback and a little bit more discussion about that before we just approve it. So that would be my only reservation, is that I would want to have maybe a proposal or some additional conversation about that before just approving it tonight.
Larry?
I've got a couple points. One, the middle school roof repairs. Wasn't the roof on the middle school just completed last year? Is that the case?
Yeah, you're talking about the third one there, the roof leak repairs?
Right, and then the next, the sixth one down, is that coming from the roof already needing repairs after a year, or?
No, these are, and Don can give more detail, but these are repairs in the interior ceiling that were caused by water leaks that took place during the process of the roof repair. So this is not a problem with the roof. Okay. This is interior ceiling repairs from leaks that have been fixed now, but now we got to replace some tiles and do some interior repairs. Don, is that an accurate summary of it?
Don, we need you to unmute.
Thanks for the clarification, Frank. That satisfies me. The other comment I had is, you know, I understand Christy's concern, but if I'm not mistaken, this request has been on the list for at least last year, and I don't know about previously. I think having been there and seen the facilities, I don't have any reservation approving that without any discussion. I think they're needed, and I'd vote for that.
Frank, will you please, you were on the committee. Frank Stewart, will you please speak to these items?
Sure. Not having Don right there accessible, a few of the concerns were, number one, from Eric Mark, were that the safety is quite a concern because we have several places with the water damage in the track that are currently trip points and a little bit dangerous to be on the track. The discussion came up with the committee about the potential of next spring moving up the construction to as soon as we could, the end of March, first part of April. And the response, of course, is that we have track meets and more particularly one that Logan High hosts as a major fundraiser, which is an invitational. So we did talk about whether we would have the potential to move up that instead of doing spring sports, et cetera, on that track. One thought that I had since our meeting, Superintendent, was whether or not we might have an opportunity to host the Logan High Invitational in conjunction with Utah State University's track, and Utah State could utilize that as a recruiting tool along with Logan High sponsoring that as a fundraiser. So I don't know if Don feels like we need to really get that started just as soon as possible, or whether it's even going to be sufficient to utilize in the spring with some of those repairs. So anyway, those were some of the concerns that came up in the committee meeting. Superintendent, perhaps you could address a little bit more of that for Don.
Don is there if he can speak to us.
I could weigh in on that if you'd like.
Yes, please.
Sorry, I've got a lot of lag in the audio, so by the time I finish hearing you, somebody else is already talking. I got the opportunity to walk the track yesterday, and I think we can safely patch some of the problem areas to make it usable for another season. I don't see that that's going to be an issue, but the underlying problems are not going to go away. We can just put some surface patch on them and make it safe to use. But we've kind of kicked this can down the road for the last several years. With my thinking is we needed to attack the whole project as one, not piecemeal it individually. And so that's why we've got, you know, the price tag as it is with the concession stand, the track, the drainage, press box. All of those are going to be impacted if we try to do just the track. Other things like getting fiber optics out there so they have the IT infrastructure that they need for broadcasting is, you know, it's perfect time to do that when we're already tearing up the track so we can put it underground. All the infrastructure for the concession stand, it's a, you know, it makes sense to do that as well while you're doing groundwork. So I think doing them all together is the prudent thing to do.
I feel like Larry, having been over in those restrooms and in the concession stands. It's something we've talked about for years and ended up doing other things to improve the athletic fields over there. But That concession stand area restrooms are used by multiple sports throughout the year. And we may find this year we broadcast games rather than have fans in the stands, and having the fiber optics there would surely be nice. So I'm one who would vote for doing the complete list myself. What are other comments? Christy.
Oh, sorry. I don't know. I can't see myself anymore. I guess I should clarify. I certainly would agree that that needs to be done, because I understand with Dawn that it has been a project that we've kicked down the road, you know, for a long time. And maybe what my comment was more is, if we do approve this, if we could have some follow through on just understanding and knowing what is going to actually be done before it's done, so we could maybe see the project laid out, so we can have some idea of what the concession stand will look like, you know, what the press box is going to look like, just so that we're abreast of what's happening, versus just saying, because a lot of these capital projects we get, we put on the list, we don't ever see the end, you know, product being done. We know it's done, but we don't get to visualize it. So maybe if we could just at least have some follow-through.
We could provide that.
Yeah, when that's done.
Go ahead, Don.
We had hired Design West to come up with the specifics of the project, and they're probably just a couple of days away from presenting those, with the renderings and all that of the press box and the concession stand. So we could get that to you in the next few days.
And I do know that we had a draft, didn't we have a draft once from MHTN as well?
I think we had a rough, it wasn't a draft, it was basically just a conception.
Oh, got ya.
But it was part of our needs. So
this one would actually be planned. We sat with Design West, Principal Ald, Eric Markworth, and Jesse. Parker. Yeah, and came up with what we liked and disliked about other schools that have recently built concession stands. Yeah. And kind of came up with a consensus between everybody of what we thought would work well at Logan High without a huge disruption in the existing fields, and also being able to serve more than one sport. So we talked about moving it to the south end of the football field so that it'd be kind of centrally located between softball, tennis, football. Still a ways away from baseball, but that one's kind of out in left field, so to speak.
Go ahead. Oh, I apologize. So as long as the board's abreast about those changes and those things that you plan on doing, I would certainly move to approve that as well. I just want to be included in the process.
Is there a second to that motion to approve the list? Seconded by Larry Williams. Any other comments or questions? Jenny.
So I just have a question, more of a curiosity, as far as would future budget things as far as the state have any impact on this?
Jeff, will you reply to that in terms of our capital fund balance and our ability to take care of these projects?
Yeah, we do have the ability to take care of the projects. You know, as you know, we're working on putting together a $5 million either real property lease or MBA bond. And so with that in mind, yes, we will. We'll have sufficient funds to cover our capital requests needs for the coming year.
All right. Any other questions or comments? We have a motion on the floor to accept the FY21 capital request as presented. All those in favor of approving this request, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Thank you for joining us, Don. Thank you for the tour today at Hillcrest. We're excited about that new building.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Our next item of business is, and I just, my iPad went down with, is action on, we need on the approval of the board stakeholder survey. We talked last board meeting about the desire of the board to have a stakeholder survey. We also discussed some of the items that we would like in that survey and who we would like it to be to fill out the survey, be requested to fill out that survey. You'll notice down at the bottom, as leadership, board leadership met with the superintendent, we decided, we talked about last time, you remember, that it was important to let our community, those who would be filling out the sheet, understand what the board does. And so we went to the National School Board Association's publication, The Key Works of School Boards. Then we would ask our those who have been asked to fill out the survey, please take a moment to rate the performance of the Board of Education on each of the following items. Vision. Effective board members establish a clear vision with high expectations for quality teaching and learning that supports strong student outcomes. They establish clear and specific goals to move the districts forward. The board's performance in this indicator has been highly effective, effective, minimally effective, and ineffective. Then we have accountability. Again, we take from the National School Board's Key Works publication. High academic standards, transparency, and accountability undergird a world-class education. True accountability depends on open decision-making, community engagement and support, and receptivity to new ideas and constructive criticism. And then we would ask for the board's, how that individual feels the board's performance is in that indicator. Policy and board operations. Policy is how a board sustainably exercises power to serve students. Through policy, school boards establish a set of cohesive guidelines able to transform vision into reality. We would ask them to respond on that. And then through public advocacy and community engagement, school boards share their concerns and actions with the public. Community leadership that builds and public support is vital to implement the board's vision. So we, and then board relationships, both the board and the superintendent have essential leadership roles that are interconnected but different. Effective school boards lead as a united team with the superintendent, each in their respective roles with strong collaboration and mutual trust. Our thoughts were, by taking this from a national publication, it basically gave what our roles are and would help those taking the survey to know our roles and be able to do specifics, especially as the board as a whole, rather than about things. This would be much more the united board. How do we function? What are your thoughts on this survey? Any changes you would like made to it? Frank.
I very much like that idea. I think it gives us some very clear validation with our constituents about how we've utilized consistency.
Any other comments?
Sounds good to me.
Seeing none, Frank, would you like to make a motion to adopt that?
Sure, I'd be happy to make a motion that as a board, we approve the board stakeholder survey using the examples from the NSBA nationally.
All right, the motion's been made by Frank Stewart. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Larry Williams. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, we will move forward with administering that as soon as possible so that we get those key stakeholders involved. We will now move on to our selection of the seconded by Larry Williams. I had some strange feedback there. Was that a problem?
No, I apologize. I was double checking our live stream and it started playing over you for a moment.
Okay, wonderful. I'm also receiving notices that Logan Municipal Council is meeting, that I could join them live, and that would really mess us up. Our next item is selection of the district auditor. And Jeff Barbin, will you please help us with this discussion item, this action item?
Okay, so we've looked at we've looked at this for several years, because typically it's not required specifically by law, but typically every 3 to 5 years, school boards and school districts should look at opening up for bid the external auditor, external auditing firm. And so we issued an RFP. The audit committee of Ann Geary, Jenny Johnson, Lynn Hobbs, and Susan Redd, and Frank Schofield were on that committee. And so we received proposals from 4 different entities, and those were all reviewed and scored by this group. And the top scoring firm was Squire & Company. And so that's, we're bringing that to the board for approval after that committee work was done in selecting Squire & Company as the external auditor. Now, this will be for 1 year, and if we're satisfied with the audit, then they would expect for another 4 years beyond that, is how it was listed in the RFP.
Larry.
Are they a local firm, Jeff?
No, they're not. They're from Orem.
But they had audit experience before, obviously, with other school districts.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they had 17 other districts that they audit within the state.
Okay.
They also know how to use Olio, as well as the student system that we use.
Okay.
And then they had lots of references from other school districts where local firms we found did one school district audit apiece. And so it was nice to look at some firms that do more than one audit, and also that information with Olio. You know, hopefully we can get some help utilizing Olio a bit better. I do want to also say that Jeff Barbin and Reagan took the only things that they did was look at the amount that would be the cost for the audit. They both took themselves out of the discussion of the other items. They helped develop the rubric, but they wanted to make sure that there was no problem with them knowing these individuals, having worked with these individuals, or anything else that would maybe cause there to be any conflict of interest.
Is the cost comparable to what we've paid in the past, Jeff?
Yeah, it's less than what we've paid in the past.
Great.
Yeah, it's significantly less.
Good.
Any other questions, Christy?
My comment was, as I noticed that they were from Utah County, and I just wonder, is that going to affect the audit, just because it'll have to come to Logan to do the audit? I mean, is that a problem versus having just someone local do it?
It's interesting how different auditing firms audit school districts. I was involved in a discussion with Randy Upton, who's the budget director for Alpine School District. He was a former business administrator for Uinta School District. And I basically had overheard a conversation with another district, was talking to him about how long the auditors are, you know, in their facility. And as some of you may know, typically the month of September, we've had our auditors come and spend, you know, basically the month of September with us, asking for information and having us pull things for them. He said with Alpine that they came for 3 or 4 days, and then they were able to get the rest of the things that they needed online. And so, you know, when I was in Paiute, the auditors that we had there had the same thing. We opened a portal for them in Ollio. They were able to go in and they couldn't, they didn't have the ability to change anything, but they did have the ability to look at everything that they needed to. And they utilized that, you know, because Paiute's kind of remote from the Wasatch Front. And so that's what I'd understood that Squire and Company does as well, that they, you know, they, even though there's, they live or they work fairly closely to Alpine School District, they were only in their facility, he said, for 3 or 4, maybe 5 days, asking them to pull things and the rest of the stuff they were able to do away from the district. And so I don't anticipate that being an issue. I'm anticipating that they'll probably be up here for 3 to 5 days, something like that, and then get the information that they need over the internet.
Sorry, follow up to that, Jeff. Do they have a track record of completing school district audits on time?
That's my understanding, is that they, and again, I didn't go through the information as thoroughly as the committee because I wasn't one that was scoring that, but I think that they addressed, make sure that they get the audits done in a timely manner.
Jenny, will you speak to that, please?
Yeah. So a couple of the points that I went over that kind of impressed me was, again, the Ollio, but also Squire had districts that they worked with that were both large, our size, smaller, but they had clients that were school districts that had been their clients for up to 30 years that were repeated clients. So that was something that made me feel better, is if they had a client, like multiple clients that had stuck with them for 20 to 30 years. So I kind of felt like if they were a repeat client for that long, school districts, that was a good, you know, green light for me. Also, they had done I think a lot of the main people that they said these would be kind of your key contact people had a lot of experience and did a lot of training or school auditing. So they had good, you know, reference and kind of key people that I think kind of sounded very positive to me comparing, you know, with the other ones. So I felt very confident with their choice and being able to go back and forth, and that they knew Ollio and had, you know, would be very comfortable to do that. So
they were also very wise. Their lead accountant, the partner, is a Utah State graduate. They have lots of BYU people, but the lead on the audit is a Utah State graduate. I thought, okay, they were wise in their choice of an Aggie. Rich County also uses them as an audit door. Christy,
another question? Sorry, Anne, I have so many comments. We have had our current auditor for a very long time. Are we going to just communicate with them that they were not chosen?
Yes. So upon board approval, my plan was tomorrow to contact Squire and Company and announce that the board had approved the award for them to be the external auditor, and then to contact the others that weren't successful in getting the audit and let them know that was the decision.
Perfect. Did we have any other local firms that applied?
Yeah, All Red Jackson was another local firm that put in an application.
Okay.
They do Cache School District, which is a non-Ollio school district.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions on the external auditor? Seeing none, Jenny, would you like to make a motion on the audit committee? We need you to turn your mute on off.
Sorry about that. Okay, so I'll make a motion to accept the recommendation of the audit committee and authorize the administration to contract with Squire and Company as the external auditor.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Seconded by Frank Stewart. All those in favor of hiring Squire and Company as our external auditor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. We will have Jeff notify them and the others who submitted RFPs tomorrow. Our next item of business is policies for approval. Superintendent.
Thank you. We have a number of these. I think we'll go ahead and just go in order as they are in board book. As you look, these, we have a few of these, but some of them are where existing policies that we currently have been split into two as we update them to reflect current guidelines and state statutes. So our first one, non-discrimination policy, DAA, basically is just our district policy that states that we do not discriminate against individuals in terms of employment decisions based on age, religion, national origin, disability, et cetera, et cetera. So it simply is the legal references and the guidelines that we would follow related to that. Making sure that we do not discharge, demote, terminate, retaliate against, harass, or refuse to hire or to promote any otherwise qualified individual or discriminate against an otherwise qualified individual with respect to compensation in terms of privileges, or conditions of employment. Talks about the definition of otherwise qualified, saying that, you know, a person who has all of the other qualifications for the job, we wouldn't discriminate against them because of one of the criteria or the categories listed above at the top. Mentions avoiding discrimination against nursing mothers, that we'll have a Title IX coordinator. We do have a Title IX coordinator. That's Melissa Richardson, our Director of Student Services, ensuring that we do not discriminate against individuals based on a disability or any sort of impairment. So there are a number of definitions and stipulations there that relate to federal law. And then we also have a Section 504 coordinator to work with individuals on appropriate actions there. That's Marcy Elliott, our Director of Special Education. And then we have a duty to report if an employee is aware of discrimination or harassment taking place in the workplace. So it's a very straightforward policy. It simply outlines the federal expectations regarding non-discrimination and ensuring that we are following those guidelines as a school district in our hiring and our employee management processes. So I'd be happy if there are any questions about that one. I'd be happy to go over those.
All right, seeing none, since it's basically state or federal law, we will go to the next policy.
Okay, so employee background checks. This is the policy governing how we conduct background checks and the requirements for employees to have background checks, which employees are required to do that, et cetera. But most of this is really, well, it's all very straightforward. The one area that has potential for some confusion, if you have the document in front of you, is as we go down to the section criminal background check for non-licensed employees and volunteers. All non-licensed employees, qualifying volunteers, and contract employees seeking employment with the district or service in a district school shall provide their personal identifying application information with their application, and they will go through a background check. A qualifying volunteer is a volunteer that is going to spend significant unsupervised time with students. So that's not every volunteer that's in the classroom. You're talking about volunteer coaches, are primarily the group that we're looking at here. Our schools work really hard to make sure that we don't put volunteers in a position where they have significant unsupervised time with students. If a volunteer were to be in that type of situation, they would be required to do the wrap back background check through the FBI. But if they will be under the supervision of the classroom teacher or another school employee, they don't have to go through that extensive background process. They just have to do the background check that runs their name against the sexual offender database. So that's one thing to clarify what we mean by a qualifying volunteer. And by contract employees, we are generally talking, and we provide this clarification a little bit further down, under background checks for employees of outside entities. What we're talking about here is employees of outside entities the district contracts with, and I apologize, we're missing a with there. I will add that in. Including substitute teachers who will be given significant unsupervised access to students in connection with their work assignment, are required to complete a criminal background check and notification process through their employer. The big situation where we deal with this is with our substitutes. Because we hire our substitutes through Kelly Services, substitute teachers are technically employees of Kelly Services, not the district. So we do not manage their background checks, but they are required to go through a background check service or process with Kelly Services. So what we're simply saying here is, as the district contracts with other service providers, if the employees of that service provider are going to be having significant unsupervised access to students in connection with their work, they're required to do a background check process through their employer instead of through the district. Those are kind of the only unusual pieces here, really. There's a little bit of a question just above the background checks for employees of outside entities. See the paragraph that states, with respect to applications submitted by prospective non-licensed employees, contract employees, or qualifying volunteers, all prospective employees and qualifying volunteers pay the cost of an FBI criminal background check. The FBI criminal background check is a condition of employment if the prospective employee or qualifying volunteer has passed an initial review and is one of a pool of no more than five candidates for a position. So the way that works is, let's say we were hiring for a classified position, so one of our ESP spots, and we did an initial review of the application and even an initial interview process, and we said, okay, from that process, here are our top three candidates. Then we say, okay, you're in this pool. Now, the condition of your employment is completion or satisfactory completion of a criminal background check through the FBI. And then they go, they pay for the background check, they get it completed, and then they're able to start working for the district. So it's a little bit, you can't require individuals to go through the background check before you've started the screening process. You have to conduct an initial review first. So you're not sending people who you have no intention of hiring off to pay the cost of getting a background check. That's the reason why that's in there. So we have an initial process where we do the screening, we do the initial interviews, and then just with the people, the person that we intend to hire, we say, okay, you passed the initial review, now you need to go complete the background check. So this policy is just to govern those processes. Yes, Christy.
So is the responsibility of paying for those background checks responsibility of the potential candidate of employment?
It's the individual that we have said, you've passed the initial review. Now we plan to hire you, but now your hiring is conditioned upon you passing the background check.
So who pays for it?
The employee does, the potential employee.
Got you. Thank you. Is there a time that we ever pay for background checks?
We do not. Now, the law states that we have to pay for it if we don't follow this process. So if, for example, we were just making a blatant statement, hey, all of you volunteers have to get a background check, then we would have a responsibility to start covering that cost. If we said every applicant has to complete the background check, then we would be responsible for recovering that cost if we didn't go through this process, because then we are creating a burden for people who are not going to be hired by the district because they have to pay the cost of the background check. So we do not have any situations where we pay the cost of the background check.
How much are they?
I'm not sure what they are currently. I want to say they're around $50 or so before. I see Shelly nodding her head. I believe she's a little more on top of that than I am, but that's generally what they were.
They end up being, they raise the price. They're like $68, I think, now. it's broken into pieces. You pay a portion of it when you get fingerprinted, and then you pay a portion of it from your first paycheck because they bill the district directly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. Some of the other things you see at the bottom, due process, that explains what we're required to do if an individual is not going to be hired based on a background check. We have to give them notice, a review of the information, and they have to have an opportunity to review the information received by the district through the background check. We also have to have these elements in here of privacy risk mitigation. Because the background check process is a wrap-back process, meaning it's ongoing, we have to have a process in place wherein if an employee leaves the district, we don't continue to receive background check information on them because they're no longer our employee. So these two stipulations state how we do that. And what we do is we simply, in our system, release the employee from our CACTUS records, and that ends our ability to receive background check reports on them. So we have to have those stipulations in there to make sure that we don't continue to receive criminal reports on individuals who may no longer work for us. So there's that policy. There's quite a bit to it, but it governs something pretty simple that's there simply to protect our students as we hire individuals.
Any questions? Right, let's move to the next policy.
Okay, this one simply is stating that an individual, employees in the district, have a legal requirement to report to the district if they are arrested for violations of the law. And this is something that has been on the state books for quite some time. This is something that we review with our employees at the start of each school year as part of their critical policy review. And it's just a reminder that if an individual is arrested for a legal violation, they are required to notify the department, the director of human resources. If they are arrested for alleged sex offenses or other alleged offenses that may endanger students during the period of an investigation, we suspend them immediately, usually suspension with pay pending an investigation. An employee is immediately suspended from any duties that require the employee to transport students or operate or maintain a district vehicle for alleged offenses involving drugs or alcohol during the period of investigation. And the employee shall report for work following the arrest unless directed not to report for work by the district. So we just take some precautions, saying if this is the type of alleged infraction that you were arrested for, we don't let you work for students or work with students. If this is the type of offense, we don't let you drive a vehicle. Other than that, we look at the offense and we say, yes, you can be at work, or no, you need to stay at home until the investigation is completed. And then we have to, when we do have individuals who are arrested, we are required to submit a report to the State Board of Education that they track the data there as well. So that, again, is a very straightforward one. It simply is the rule saying that if you are an employee of the district and you are arrested, you have to report it to your employer. And that's because of the responsibility that we have as educators to care for children in our schools.
And you'll note that it's taken from state board rule as well as state law. Okay, any questions, comments? Then let's move to the next policy.
Okay, the educator exit and engagement surveys is a policy that simply allows us or puts us in compliance with state board rule and state statute. You may recall that a year ago, the legislature passed a law requiring exit surveys and engagement surveys for all teachers. This is the policy that enacts that law and the board rule. And you see the board rule is listed at the bottom of the policy. It's R277-325. So it simply states that we, in accordance with state policy, we administer exit surveys and engagement surveys. We use the platform that the Utah State Board of Education has adopted, which is Qualtrics. And the data from those surveys is protected. We receive the reports from those surveys, but the data of the individual completing the surveys is kept confidential to protect you know, their personally identifiable information. So there, it simply states that we administer the surveys, and it has some of the guidelines. For example, it allows each educator to remain anonymous. We may not request the educator's CACTUS number. It asks each educator to identify their local education agency or their district. It may ask each educator to identify their school, and it may ask each educator to provide basic non-identifying demographic data as requested by the superintendent. That would be the state superintendent of instruction. So, again, very simple. It simply states that we administer the surveys and how we do so. And those have been administered. We've administered the engagement survey that the state prescribes, and that data has been shared with the state. We have the exit surveys, and those invitations to complete the exit surveys have been shared with any employees who are leaving our district at the end of this year. So we can't require them to complete it. We send them the link, we send the invitation, and then the data is submitted to the state automatically.
Questions for the superintendent. Will we be able to look at the responses to both the engagement and the exit survey? And what is the engagement survey like?
The engagement, the first answer, yes. We can see the data from any surveys that come from our district. The engagement survey is lengthy. It is quite different from what we do with the Gallup survey. The state-level engagement survey really is an attempt to gather statewide data on teacher perceptions. It's not designed to lead to the school-level types of discussions that the Q-12 survey that we do through Gallup is designed to do. So it really, as we look at the responses, there are a lot more questions because its intended purpose really is to gather statewide data, as opposed to really promote school level discussions. But we'll still be sharing that with the board. We'll share that with principals. So it's something they can be aware of as we move into next year and we continue with the Q-12 survey. It will be another reference point.
Any other questions? Right, let's move to the last policy.
So our last one is sexual harassment by an employee. And this is simply an update of our policy that clarifies that harassment of any kind is not acceptable. It has the definitions, examples of sexual harassment, the reporting procedures, who receives those reports, you know, what our process for maintaining confidentiality is, what our process is for conducting an investigation, who does that, you know, all of those things. There isn't too much new in this policy, just some clarification with code, a couple wording changes that have come from legal counsel for the Utah School Board Association. But again, it just clarifies that sexual harassment is not okay. We have a process for receiving reports, for investigating allegations of harassment, and we will respond promptly to investigate them and take corrective action.
Any questions or comments regarding that policy? Seeing none, I would accept a motion on adoption of these policies. Christy Cooley?
I just have a quick question. Would you like that motion to include the policies that we're going to rescind?
If you would like to make it that way, you may do so.
All right. I would like to make a motion that we approve policies DAA, non-discrimination, DAC, employee background checks, DACA, employees' responsibility to personally report arrests and convictions, DFB, educator exit and engagement surveys, DKB, employee sexual harassment, as well as to rescind policies 351, employee criminal background check and arrest disclosure requirements, as well as 356, discrimination and harassment.
Okay. Okay, the motion was made by Christy Cooley to adopt those policies and rescind the other policies as it was seconded by Jenny Johnson. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting those policies and rescinding the two policies, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, we will move on to our, we have already done the capital expense request, so we will move to our discussion items. We have our first item of discussion is a timeline for board surveys and evaluations. One of the things that we've talked about is I've asked all of you to submit to me what you want to do in our board summer workshop. That's the next item we're going to be discussing. What we do on that day does impact this calendar to a certain extent. In the past, we have done the look at the board survey that's administered and also the business administrator and the board member surveys. With the items that have been submitted by you board members, I'm not sure this will be able to be done on that date. So this could change some. Frank, you had a comment.
Well, the calendar just shows 2 days, the 15th and 16th. I just wanted to clarify, are we 2 days or just the 15th?
On the 15th, we have the board workshop all day. And then on the 16th, we have a regular board meeting at 5 o'clock.
I see. So not the day of the 16th.
Not the day of the 16th. And I realize I have not sent all of you the board second. I'm going to send to all of you the compilation of what you suggested for the board summer workshop. So I am doing that. Frank, will you go over this? Frank, Superintendent, will you go over this agenda, the calendar here, so I can send out that other email?
Certainly. What we're looking at is before we have our meeting, as we're preparing for that, there are a number of pieces of data that just need to be collected. One is the data from the board stakeholder survey. So we will send that out tomorrow so we can start collecting that data. On May 29th, Jeff and I will submit to you all our annual progress reports on our goals from this year. So you'll have those. And then we've requested from USBA that they send us the three surveys that they do, the key indicators, performance indicators for superintendent, business administrator, and Board of Education. So you as a board will have an opportunity to fill or complete those surveys, but you'll have mine and Jeff's goal reports before you do that. So you have those to refer to. The idea would be that we complete those surveys the week of June 1st through the 5th. So we have 1 week to complete all three of those. And then, well, I apologize. First of all, June 1st through the 5th, I will work to compile the stakeholder survey data that comes from the board survey. The 1st through the 7th, we'll ask the board members to complete those surveys. So during that week, there'll be two big tasks going on. You all completing those surveys, and I'll be compiling the data from the stakeholder survey that comes through, working with Ann and Jenny to do that. June 8th through the 12th, USBA staff will give them that time to compile the results of those three surveys, and then we'll have the survey data. If we choose to consider that or set time aside on the agenda to discuss those, we'll have those in time for our June 15th meeting. If the board decides to move those discussions to later in a closed session to do the stakeholder feedback or the evaluation of Jeff and I, then we'll still have the data, so it gives the board more time to review it and make sure that we were able to compile our response or prepare for our discussion. So that's a time frame for some surveys that we plan to send out so we can collect the data in time for the board to use it for our discussion on June 15th.
Questions, comments on that timeline? received from Richard Stowell the surveys for the business administrator, superintendent, and board members. As I look through some of those questions, I remember why some of them we haven't liked in the past in the format with the 10 answers. But unless you direct us otherwise, we thought we would use the USBA surveys at least one more year. All right, if there is no discussion on that, we will move forward with this tentatively. Please let me know if that's a problem for any of you. And when you get it, Christy.
I just got your note. You don't have my suggestion on there. I'm sure that just was a clerical error, Anne, so that's all good. I'm not offended at all.
Did you send that via just texting?
Correct.
Okay, yes. What you texted me yesterday. Okay.
Yes.
I didn't know if you were going to send an official email or not.
That was my official correspondence via text. Okay. So are we going to be doing the what I'm saying is that we'll be doing the evaluations during the workshop?
That's what we need to go to next. So the question that the agenda item for right now is the timeline for the board surveys and evaluation with, depending on our next discussion item, I would suggest we either, if we don't have time on the 15th, that we would perhaps have a closed session on the 16th where we meet at 3:00, go over those surveys, and then go into a regular board meeting. Most of that board meeting will be discussing budget for the next year, since we need to adopt the budget in our next and the following board meeting. Frank.
Are we also doing a Hillcrest tour that afternoon? I have that on my schedule.
I believe we thought we would do it. We may have changed that. We'll need to talk about that. If we have a closed session, it's hard to have a Hillcrest tour. We may want to do that at the last meeting of the month rather than at that one. So that's something we need to discuss. So let's go to the board summer workshop, and then we can kind of fill in some dates from that point. What you receive from me, and I can only look at it when I get off of FaceTime, because it's so you can't hear me if I go to that, can you? You know what? I can look at what I emailed to you on my iPad. That's how I'll do it. So you see before you what I received from board members, including Christy. Will you just tell them your comment?
Well, I just was assuming that we would be doing board the evaluation, so I did not suggest that as an official. Oh, whoops! I'm not mute. So I did not include that in my initial comments. But the only other thing I had was to discuss the rubric for the school improvement plans.
That's correct. You did have that, which maybe we do in that meeting, or we add that to another board meeting day. I need to continue to search to find what I just sent to all of you so just a second, and I will go there. Let's see what I sent. So as if you will quickly look through that list. And Superintendent, will you send that to me via my Yahoo account? Because my iPad's not pulling up my Logan Schools account for some reason.
You are wanting the compilation of the suggestions, correct?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
And since I'm on my computer with the Zoom meeting, if I go into my Word document, you lose me, all of you.
So you would like this forwarded to
my Yahoo account, please? Yes. I thought I was so organized today. Should have just printed it off.
I tried to just send it to you. If you like, I can share the screen and we can display it. But
okay, that would be wonderful if you would like to do that. It was requested last year at the end of our meeting that we try to do all of our board workshop in one day. That's why we did full day. And then the next night, which is our Tuesday night, do the regular board meeting, which would include a discussion on the budget. Okay, thank you, Superintendent. So you have here what are some of the suggestions that were sent in by board members. I don't know that I need to read all of them. What has been traditional at the summer workshop is to do the evaluations of the superintendent, the BA, and the board, do a review, and then also review the goals. As I look at everything that board members have submitted, I'm not sure that we can discuss all of that in one day. Superintendent, will you scroll down? Hopefully everybody's been able to look at those areas. I also put on there what our author, Doug Edie, has said, author of The Five Habits. He said, make sure your board is involved in putting together the detailed retreat design, which we are doing right now. Employ a professional facilitator. There are some items on these lists that a professional facilitator may help us with, or we may just want to hash it out as our group. Use well-designed breakout groups to generate content, promote feelings of ownership, and foster active participation. The only breakout session we would propose is for us to meet, and I will talk about a little later, meet with district and school administrators during that lunch period. Avoid reaching premature formal consensus for final decisions and agree on the follow-through process at the beginning. As we read last week, that he suggests very strongly that we do not say we will come up with the final goals for next year during this meeting.